In our weekly studies, we saw that our life is practically mixed with so many conflicts that we face every day in life. The conflicts have the internal as well as external nature, and they try to pull us into the different directions, and we get confused where to go, what to do. It would have been so nice had we had just one desire in life and just direct our life in that direction. That would have been so nice. There wouldn't have been this conflict. But what we have to deal every day is myriads of conflicting desires. One moment we want to do this, next moment something opposite. One moment we want to do lot of work, next moment we want to relax and rest. One moment we want to study a lot, next moment we feel, oh, enough of it, what a boring job, my head is just whirling around the axis. It is all these conflicting desires we get. We get pulled by so many things. One likes to eat nice things and also feel that one should cut down the weight and do dieting. It is so what to do? And thus one gets thoroughly confused. And these conflicts enter into many deeper aspects of life too. What to do in our very close relationships when we are faced with some uphill task of our moral judgments. Suppose I am in the position of judge, and there is a very serious criminal case before me, and the one who is charged with a heinous crime is my close relation, maybe my son, my daughter, my somebody. Now a big emotional conflict ensues there. What should I be doing now? My ethical and moral sense tells me one thing. My attachment to my kith and kin tells me something different, something entirely opposite. And the life gets torn, as we see in the case of Arjuna. His sense of duty told him to go ahead with this war that he has taken up. And we saw why this war was important to be fought for Arjuna. And then there is the other idea that, yes, whom am I fighting after all? They are my kith and kin. I will lose them. And again, this is a very serious, all-embracing war in which I may get killed too. Who knows? And the mind shudders. Wants to take some shortcut or wants an escape route. And Arjuna wants to take that escape route. But, friends, there is no escape route. It is like a rabbit, when saw that a fox is chasing it, and decided to take the easiest escape route by shutting the eyes. That is no escape route. By shutting the eyes, the rabbit thought, now it is all dark around, now the fox won't see me. It is like that we do our actions. We think that if we just escape, the things will be all right. It doesn't happen. The problems persist. In fact, they intensify. And therefore, what needs to be done is to do the right activity. And in this third chapter, we were discussing the secret of right activity as expounded by Lord Krishna. This is a wonderful science. The idea of right activity you find in all different scriptures. In the Vedanta, you will see many beautiful examples of this. A great analysis has been done, but nowhere have I found so complete and a very systematic description of how the right activity gradually elevates us towards our goal. The right activity becomes the most important means of firstly understanding our goal and then putting our life on the track to experience it. The goal has two aspects as we see, the understanding of it and experience of it. Both are important. In fact, both together make the whole. Just as the two sides of a coin, they make the coin. Similarly, the theory and practice, understanding the ideal and its experience, both have to go hand in hand. Nothing is less important than the other. And therefore, we see here it was told that you should proceed in right activity. That is, the technical name for that is Karma Yoga, Yoga of Action. Yoga, as we saw, is making what we theoretically understand as a practical experience. The yoga, you can, just as an illustration, understanding from a cooking book how to prepare something, and then actually cooking it and eating it becomes the yoga. And the cooking part of it, the practical aspects of it, that is the yoga. So this yoga is being discussed here, and when it is done, now the purpose of the yoga is finished. You are moving towards the goal. Now when the goal is reached, now stop it. Like the flight, you have taken the flight to go to some place, and you are going to Nairobi. Now when the plane is going to land there, when the Nairobi comes, the plane lands there. Now you get out of the plane, you know, don't just keep on sitting there. You took the plane, very good, but it was the means to an end. Now when the end comes, now its purpose is finished. And as the purpose is finished, now you don't have to continue with it. Similarly, this right activity, when conducted properly, thoroughly, when these means are perfected, you get to the goal. The life is illumined by the experience of the self. And now there is no more activity. The duties are finished in life. The Swami Vivekananda's complete works will tell you, at many places he has discussed this idea of infinitely continuing progress. The progress is not an infinite thing. The word progress presupposes that there is a goal to be attained through it. And when you attain to it, then there is no meaning to this word progress. So this is attained by yoga, and now one doesn't need to do work. After telling this disciple Arjuna, here comes the psychology. Bhagavad Gita is a very beautiful psychology study too, that when you hear something nice, the mind grabs it. Yes, I have attained the goal. Perfect calmness, perfect peace, all that I wanted to attain in life is attained. Now this is just heard, not attained. But mind plays that game of wishful thinking. And just by thinking about it, it feels that, yes, I have got it. And thus now, since I have got it, I don't need to follow the means anymore. Yes, I am that. Sometimes doing the meditation, just one thinks about it and feels, I am there. I am there, I got it. I am the Brahman, the Absolute, the Unchangeable, and all that. Well, it lasts for about 30 seconds more, but that's all that, because it is just a thinking, you know. Like you may dream about what you will be doing after going to Nairobi and seeing those great Kenyan national parks, and after dreaming about it for 30 seconds, you find that you are just still in your bed and haven't done anything about going to Nairobi. So it is in the same fashion. Arjuna started thinking, wow, that is so what I was thinking, Arjuna, that no activity for me, that is right. Now Lord Krishna says to him, therefore, let us, for the sake of argument, let us say that you don't need to do it for yourself. But you are a role model for so many people. They are looking at you, and so for their benefit, you must continue acting. It is, Lord Krishna knows very well that Arjuna is not that person of that attainment of supreme knowledge. He needs to do, but he may be deluding himself by thinking that I don't need to do work. Okay, if you don't need to work for yourself, then work for others. And Lord gives his own example. Last time we saw that even I have to do, I have nothing to attain. I am Lord. I am perfected. There is no need for any action for me. I have nothing to gain. And yet, I keep working all the time. In Mahabharata, the scripture of which Bhagavad Gita is a part, daily routine of Lord Krishna is given during this period of war. Otherwise also you find what he was doing in his childhood. See, the whole time is occupied with intense activity and yet is intensely peaceful. It is, there is no conflict between activity and peace in case of such personages. And the reason will be described in the next few verses. The person who is now having this supreme knowledge that I am, and not the body, not the mind, and doesn't get disturbed by the activities of body and mind. The body may be doing something. The body and mind, they are engaged in different activities, and this person is not getting associated with any of it, knowing that I am just the witness, and just thus remains completely unattached, completely unaffected. So he told that, let us see the 26th verse, that how the person of illumination acts न बुद्धिभेदं जनयेत् अज्ञानां कर्मसंगिनां जोषयेत् सर्वकर्माणि विद्वान् युक्तः समाचरन्. The wise man should not unsettle the faith of the ignorant who are attached to work. He should make them devoted to all work, performing action himself intently. They, otherwise looking at this person who is beyond all works and not doing anything, and the ignorant also feels that that is what he should be doing. So to set an example, the man, illumined person also keeps on doing the action although not required for himself. Because an example is to be set. Like last time I gave you the example of the that example comes in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, that a doctor was brought a small child suffering from some stomach ailment, and the doctor told, okay, this is the medicine and I will tell you what this child should not eat for some days to come, tomorrow, come tomorrow for that. And then the child went back with his father. The father and the child came next day, and the child was told, the father and the child was told that don't eat molasses and tamarind. And the father said, well, you could have saved me a trip. Why did you not tell it just yesterday? And then, taking the father aside, this doctor told, yesterday when you came here, there was a big quantity of molasses and tamarind lying right in front here. So this child, had I told this child at that time, don't eat all that, he would have thought that these are the nice things this doctor eats himself and is telling me not to eat. So therefore, I sent you away at that time, got all those things removed in the inner room, and now therefore I can tell you that yes, don't take it. So this is for education. So similarly, although the enlightened person doesn't need to act, yet continues with various acts. I also some earlier occasion gave that beautiful example of one Shankaracharya, who Shankaracharya, not the Adi Shankaracharya, recent one, who was asked this question. This Shankaracharya was considered an illumined person. So this man went to see him and saw this teacher doing the worship, ritualistically doing all worship. So he thought that why should he require to do worship? He is illumined. So he sat quietly for a little while and asked the question that is it necessary for an illumined person to do worship? Why should he do the worship? And the answer was given by this illumined person by asking another question. What should he do? And that is the answer to this question. What should he do? Anything that he does, you can ask the same question. And that is it necessary for the illumined to do this? If the person is sleeping, the same question can be asked. Is it necessary for the illumined person to sleep? Well, doesn't need to do anything, but is setting an example for others. And while doing it, that the next verse says, how is the attitude? Anybody will say that I am doing it for the example, I don't need it myself. Yogatmananda can also boast, you know, that I don't need it, I am doing just for the sake of you people. But there is a test for it. I am not capable of saying this because of the test involved. What is the test here? There should be no trace of ego there. The ego, absence of ego alone makes one capable of doing actions in that manner. The ego is all effaced. Prakritehe kriyamanani, the 27th verse of 3rd chapter. Prakritehe kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Actions are done in all cases by the gunas of prakriti. He whose mind is deluded through egoism thinks, I am the doer. Now, this is a philosophically very important verse to understand, that whenever you see an action happening, like I think I am giving you a class, I am speaking, I am thinking, and then I am speaking out everything, I am the doer. But an illumined person sees what's happening. The vocal cords are moving. I am not doing anything. The vocal cords are moving. The mind is vibrating in thoughts. Many thought layers are coming up. I am not doing anything. This is the experience of a person who is without any ego. The one with ego, it is called here deluded person, deluded by ego, feels I am doing this and this and this and this. I am the doer. Therefore, we immediately claim the result also, that I am the father or mother of this child. The child is mine. Well, nobody really has any claim on that. We get deluded by such thinking. What have you done? It is you didn't do anything. The body did something, you were just an instrument, that body was an instrument, and something happened. You didn't do anything consciously there to make the child. No parents know how did they make the nose of the child and the ear of the child. Nothing is known that how they made it. They didn't make it at all, but feel that I am the father, I am the mother, this is mine. This is the ego that functions. The nature keeps on mixing up the things. They are like the body is working. I am not really working. But by ego, I feel I am working. I do not really do anything. I am changeless. I have no attributes. I am everywhere the same. There is no work there at all. The work is possible for a person only by this delusion, this attachment. And just think, you know, that a particular heap of flesh, bone, blood is tied with this awareness. I am this heap of flesh, bones and blood. And so, because of this mistaken notion, what happens then, whatever changes this heap has, I feel this is the what is happening to me or I am doing. It is not really connected with I at all. The illumined person has realized this separation between the self and the attributes of what it is called here gunas, the prakriti or the nature. The nature has all this material, the gross material as well as the subtle material called thought. That also is matter. Thought also is matter. Thought as well as the gross material, the physical matter, both are just part of nature. I am not a part of it. I am just the witness. I am not affected by that at all. Just as the screen doesn't get affected by whatever happens in the movie. The screen, everything is happening on the screen. Bad actions are going on, good actions are going on. Jesus is giving the great Sermon on the Mount, that is also in the movie. He is being crucified, that is also in the same movie, going on in the same screen. The screen is part of neither of it. The screen doesn't get affected by either of it. There is no blood stains on the screen when some murder takes place in the movie. The screen remains unattached. I am that screen on which this movie of body is going on. Like the pictures on the screen, they come and go. And these pictures, they come and go. Think of all this as a big movie. And the whole universe can be thought of as a huge, huge IMAX theater. You know? We don't need to go any other place to see movie. In this big movie, we again have a movie theater. You know, like in a movie, again you see sometimes that in the movie, again there is a movie scene. So in this big movie, there is again some movie theaters, and then one goes there. So, but this itself is a big movie, and the self is the screen of it. So that is always present. How do you know that the self is the screen? Because it is always present in all experiences. Like the screen is present in all the scenes. Howsoever fast a car can run in a movie, it never goes beyond the screen. It doesn't go beyond that. It cannot transcend the screen. Similarly, we never can transcend the self. The self is ever present, and that is why we can see that it is unattached. It doesn't participate, although every picture is going on only on it. So, a person of knowledge therefore knows that although all these actions are going on the screen, the screen does not do any of it. Screen does not perform any action, any of these actions. And therefore, in fact, philosophically speaking, it is very difficult. Many philosophers have tried to fix the responsibility of action. For moral and ethical judgments, one has to fix the responsibility of action, especially when it comes to some harmful or criminal action. Who did it? Who is ultimately responsible? There was one great philosopher, A.J. Iyer, so American philosopher, not too long ago, and he has done extensive work on this, and says that suppose you see that somebody shot the gun and killed somebody, now the question comes, who is responsible for that? The ordinary and obviously the proper thinking would be that the one who pulled the trigger is responsible for that. But One may wonder, what about the manufacturer of the gun? Can the fellow fire if the gun itself has not been manufactured? So the responsibility should go also to the one who has manufactured the gun. How can that fellow escape responsibility? Logically speaking, had there been no gun, this fellow couldn't have fired the gun. So therefore, the blame also should go to that person. Then you can go further back. Well, how could the gun be fired if there is no gunpowder? So the blame should go to the one who is maker of the gunpowder, and so on and so forth. So you cannot really fix the responsibility objectively speaking. Therefore, it can be fixed only by not viewing the action, but by viewing the intention. That if there is an evil intention, the murderer's intention, then because of that intention, the action took place, and thus this person is responsible for the murder because of the intention. If the intention was not that of murder, and yet the bullet was fired and the fellow died, then it gets turned into negligence and accident. The charge is not that of murder, but of an unintended manslaughter. So it has much lesser punishment because there was no evil intention associated with it. So it is therefore the intention becomes very important in judging that who is the doer. Once you go beyond all desires, you have no intention, and therefore you are not doer of anything. Like the screen is not doer of anything, although all evil actions are in the movie, they are taking place right on it. And the screen does not get any credit of being a very saintly person. The screen, although all the great, good, heroic, nice actions are going on right there too. So, the screen is untouched by any of these. Now, there is a danger here that anybody would think that yes, and especially people come to this idea when a blame is approaching them. Somebody is about to blame them. Then a person becomes immediately defensive. I have done it, but now how to defend myself? So this comes as a handy argument for as a defense mechanism. The scriptures say that I am not the doer. No? It is only the body and the mind they do. I am not the doer. Sri Ramakrishna tells a nice story. Very interesting, that a man who was very proud of his beautiful garden. Many people are, you know, when they are very interested in gardening and love that and are expert also, they produce many things in the garden, and therefore whenever somebody comes to see around, they enthusiastically show, see, this is this and this is called this and this is a very rare plant, you know, can you guess where could I get it from, and so forth. So that it goes on because they are so interested in that. And they are proud to tell that, yes, I have done all this myself. Now there was one gardener like that. And he was doing all that very nicely, very proud of his work. Wonderful gardening. Once one cow somehow or other entered into the garden. And then as per the cow, you know, cow is not interested in the aesthetics of the garden, ate away all the plants that were there. And this fellow got so enraged. There was a big staff, took it and hit on the cow, on the cow's head with such fierceness that the cow died right there. And you know, with Hindus, somehow the killing of the cow is a big sin. This sin cannot be repudiated. There is no possibility of getting over this sin. Don't kill cows. Killing cow is considered very bad. Now this man thought that, now I have killed cow, terrible. But immediately, this philosophy immediately come. Otherwise, we are not very much interested in scriptures. But when some such thing comes, after all, I didn't kill, He started thinking that I didn't kill. After all, it was the hand who hit the cow. And therefore, the blame should go to the one who is the controller of the hand. And one heavenly deity, Indra, is considered the governor of the hand. So it is said that the sin, when the sin went to this man, the man said, I didn't do it. You go to the Indra, who is the controller of the hand. He did it. And now this Indra said, I am ready to accept the sin, provided the man is sincere about it. Then so Indra took the form of a Brahmin and was just came there as if very much interested in seeing the garden. And he started asking the question to the gardener about it. Hey, whose is this garden? Mine. Oh wow, you? Yours? Yes, what do you mean, mine? It is, and who does work here? Who has planted these plants? The person must be really having lot of knowledge. Who did it? I did it. I don't brag, but one must tell the truth. It is I who did it. Right from morning till night I work here. I see. You did all this, huh? Yes, I did all this, and this plant, that plant, and praising like that, this Indra, in the form of Brahmin, brought him where the cow was lying dead.
Who killed the cow?
Now, till now, this fellow was saying, I did. Now, he couldn't say that somebody else now is using the hand and killed the cow. He had to own his blame. So, who is eligible for saying that I don't do anything when there is no sense of ego at all? There is another nice story that Sri Ramakrishna used to tell. There are many such illustrations, friend, but see this one, for example. There is the gopis in Vrindavan, they have their business of this dairy business. They had cows and would get the milk and milk products, and they those were not the days of refrigeration and all that. They had to go to the other places with their milk and sell it. So there is the river Jamuna near their place, big river. And they would get a boat and cross the river and sell the milk and would come back. Now that day, that river was flooded. There was terrible flood and no boat was going. And these gopis, they were there with all their milk products, now feeling that sense of frustration. What will happen? It will be a big loss now. All this milk will just be spoiled if we do not get the chance to go and sell it. At that time, a sage, Vyasa, arrived there. And the gopis went to him. The sage is thought to be, having all solutions for all problems. So these gopis approached him. Hey, please show us how we can cross through this. Find out some way. And this sage said, first of all, I am very hungry. It is, give something to eat. And these gopis had some milk and something, and they gave that, and he ate sumptuously. And after eating, he stood in front of the river and said, "O river Jamuna, if I have not eaten anything, please part yourself, make way for these women to cross." And the gopis were astounded. What, he has eaten so much now? He should have said like this, "Oh, river Jamuna, if I have eaten more than stomachful, please part and let these gopis pass." But he has said something completely opposite. What will happen now? And they saw in front of their eyes that the river parted, and then they went through it. Why? Because this sage had no attachment with body, no ego at all. He ate as if somebody fills foodstuff in a bag. This is a skin bag, you know. So, not that I am eating, but some material is filled into a bag. Just as, you know, you fill gas in your car. You don't have the idea that I am eating something at that time, because you know you are not the car. What is this body? A vehicle. It is just a vehicle. Our ignorance makes us identify with it and think that I am eating. No, it is, you are just fueling the vehicle. There is no I there. By ignorance, one says, "I am so and so, and I am eating, and I am doing this, and I am doing that." Ahankara vimudhatma, the person deluded by ego, says, "I am the doer." What power do we have? And we, as Jesus says, we do not have even the capacity to turn a hair on our own head, black or white. And we say, "Hey, I will do this and I do that." What do? You do not do anything. You have no power to do anything. It is by delusion, by thinking that I am so and so, and you feel unnecessarily that your ego gets more inflated, that's all. It is another example that Sri Ramakrishna used to give, that they, in a big pot, when you cook the vegetables, they put the water is boiling, and you put potatoes and onions and beans and all that stuff, and you see that as the water boils, those potatoes and onions, they start dancing, you know, as the water is boiling. So on those boiling waves of water, these potatoes and onions, they start dancing, and they feel, "Oh wow, what a wonderful dance I am doing." Are they doing any, just put the fire off and all their dance stops? This man, he says, "I can do this and I can do that." A single little stroke of paralysis puts everything and gone, you know. A simple something, Holy Mother used to say, even a little screw in the brain goes here and there, all this completely changes. And where is this power? You don't do anything. It is by ego one keeps on having this feeling, "I will do this and I do this and I can do this." It is not true. So this is ahankara vimudha, the person deluded by egoism and feels that I do all this. A person, the next one, next verse says that what a person of right understanding, how this person feels, or how this person's awareness is. A very beautiful description. It is this descriptions of Bhagavad Gita are so pithy. I mean, in one small word, they put so much of meaning there. The 28th verse, we will not get time to complete it today, but we will just read it at least. Tattvavittu mahabaho gunakarma vibhagayoho guna guneshu vartanta iti matva na sajjate. But he who knows, O mighty armed one, the truth as to the differentiation of senses and their functions from the self, he, knowing that the gunas or senses rest in the gunas or sense objects, is not attached. This is the difference. The tattvavit, the one who knows the essence, that person's behavior is completely different. You see that person acting like any other person, but the awareness behind it is completely different. Imagine, you know, that a person in a movie is involved in the act of thieving. He's stealing something. Now the person, his friend goes in to see the movie and says, "Hey, you stole so much money from that house. I saw you doing it." Did he steal? He knows he did not steal at all. That was what was happening in the movie. He did not steal anything. So similarly, this person remains completely detached. It is a great virtue that we need to cultivate. It is not very easy, of course not very difficult either. We do many more difficult things. It is this idea of I am not the body, when cultivated properly, leads to this tremendous understanding and awareness that I am not involved in anything. I am perfect. I am everywhere. I am peace itself. I am bliss itself. And we will, if we proceed with our practice in this manner, each of us has the potential to get to that ultimate goal in life. We will continue this study next Friday. Any questions? Yes, Richard?
I keep moving from going through life and seeing it like a horror film, you know, with the war and all this killing and the corruption. And then I feel like I'm driving around like I'm in a spaceship and having a great time, like a joyride. I don't seem to have a great deal of purpose in my life other than doing whatever I'm supposed to do. Do I need a purpose? I'm having a pretty good time, actually.
It is, yeah. It is, you are having, but the purpose is to keep on having good time all the time, is it not?
I don't know.
Why you are asking me? You have to find purpose for yourself, is it not?
Maybe.
Yeah, because even if I tell you this is the purpose, you may say that may be purpose for you and not for me.
Let us
begin it like this. Do you feel that there should be a purpose or there should be no purpose? So there is a first thing is, do you feel the need to be integrated? That suppose somebody is, do you feel the need to be honest to yourself?
Honest to myself, yes.
Yeah, so that is, there is a purpose, you know. That means you cannot say one thing today and another thing tomorrow about the purpose. It is, that is, you see, the one has to begin at asking oneself that the unchanging center of our being, in spite of all the changes, that is what we are looking at. And suppose I ask you, I tell that example to many people, Richard, I need $100 today, I'll return it tomorrow to you. And Richard, nice man, you know, you can try that on him. he will give you $100, you know. Yes. And then, the next day, he asked me, hey Swami, I gave you the yesterday, is it not? And then give me back today, you told you will give back today. Sir, well, who took, who gave? You know, the things change, you know, the body changes all the time. Depends on which day you ask me. that person is gone, the one who gave has changed, the one who took has changed. You won't like that answer unless you have taken it from me, you know. It is. So, the day you have taken it from me, you will like that, yes, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not supposed to return. I don't need to return, I didn't take at all. But when it is, the movie is different, then you feel, no, I ought to be the one single being, the one who is same in the midst of the changes of the body. In the midst of all these changes, there is something unchanging. So that unchanging becomes the focus. That realization or experience of that unchanging, that becomes then the goal of life. No other goal can be thought of as goal. If you keep on analyzing, you will soon come to this understanding that nothing changing can be the goal of life. So that is how one has to think of the goal in life. So we shall conclude with the closing prayers.
गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्र विस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्मात् विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतं एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकम् तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।